establishment's trying to sell. It's a guy with the balls told the establishment to go to hell. It ain't about the money you make when a record gets sold. It's about
doing it. Hello, everybody, and welcome into the student section here on 90.7 The Capstone. The Wednesday crew is back together. PJ was not here last week, but he's back. Matt Davis running the soundboard as always. I'm your host, Eric Evenson. We have a big, big show today. Some big news coming out yesterday. College football rankings. The MLB season ended this weekend with the Royals winning the World Series. We'll talk about that, and then we'll also talk some free agency. This free agency, unlike a lot of sports, free agency starts pretty early in baseball. Starts the 7th, so just a few days. It's a big show today. I'm excited. Let's get right into it. College football playoff rankings, the first week came out last night. I'll just go quickly through the top 15. Those are probably the only teams that really have a chance of getting into. There's only a couple teams down towards the 14 or 15 that have a chance. So we'll start top four. Clemson number one. LSU number two. Ohio State number three. And then the big talk at number four. Alabama coming in at number four. I thought that was a little bit surprising. But I wasn't shocked. So I'll go through 5 through 15 here. Notre Dame number 5, Baylor number 6, Michigan State 7, TCU 8, undefeated Iowa 9, Florida 10, Stanford 11, Utah 12, Memphis 13, Oklahoma State, the undefeated Cowboys at 14, and then Oklahoma at 15. So I'll just get straight into it, guys. How'd you think the committee did?
I thought they did great. Had absolutely no problem with their top four. Ohio State obviously is the defending champions, but they haven't looked like it, and they haven't played many people. But because they're still undefeated, I have no problem with them being in the top four and dropping them to number three. Obviously, Clemson had a great win at home against Notre Dame. They haven't lost any of their games. They've beaten everybody they're supposed to beat, and they got a big game against Florida State this week. And then obviously the two SEC teams, the game we got this week in T-Town with LSU and Alabama. And so that one will sort itself out. But obviously LSU doesn't have a loss. We do. So got no problem with LSU at two. And then Alabama at four have absolutely no problem with. The reason why the college football decided to go away from the whole BCS thing was because of things like this. A lot, even just the eye test. And Alabama... you know, who they played out of schedule with Wisconsin and the dominance they've shown in conference against people like Georgia and A&M, deservedly so, to be number four. And then the Big 12 teams, they just haven't played anybody.
Yeah.
And obviously, everybody's been talking about it. Now that they're in November and they're going to beat up on each other, the team that runs the table in November is going to have a great shot. But because it's week one and it's going to play itself out, this top four doesn't mean anything, but I got no problem with who they have.
What about you, Matt?
Yeah, I feel the same. I was really shocked to see TCU behind Alabama and TCU ranked so low.
Yeah, I didn't have any problem with no Big 12 teams getting in originally just because they haven't played anyone, but I was shocked to see TCU down at 8.
I mean, that's where we were after we barely beat Arkansas.
Yeah.
We were at 8, so I was really shocked to see that. I don't disagree with the four teams. I definitely don't think Alabama should be in there just yet, just because of that. And I hate to say, it's just the way that they've played sometimes in the season is not reflecting of a top four team. And it's the same way with TCU. I was shocked to see them so low, but I don't think they deserve to be in there either with their loss, with their wins, but last second wins against Texas Tech, Kansas State, Iowa State. So, you know, I think Alabama should probably be about where they were, 6-5 to 8 in one of those places. But top four is pushing it right now. I think they should have put Alabama after this weekend. We should see what happens.
I thought the committee got this completely right. I loved their four teams, and I like what they did with the Big 12. Right now, the Big 12, none of those teams have played anyone that could get them into this college football playoff. I remember watching or seeing a graphic last night. Baylor's key wins were against 5-4 Texas Tech and 3-4 West Virginia. Those are their key wins. That those are garbage wins.
The only good win it was Oklahoma going to Tennessee.
Yeah.
And now Tennessee's sort of fallen off. That, yeah, that one doesn't look as good anymore.
Baylor's strength of schedule is ranked
103rd.
Nine. Yeah, 109. It's crazy.
And we're third.
That's the main reason I think they had Alabama up there is because that strength of schedule is third. Baylor's 109th. And something they kind of did that I've never heard of, but it's strength of results, how you've played against teams, how you played against teams compared to how they expected you to play. Alabama was number two in strength of results, including that Ole Miss loss.
Right. Now, do you guys like the Big 12's philosophy of just having it all on the line in November? And really, if you lose a game at this point, you're just totally done?
I don't mind it just because, so you're not going to get into, obviously they've shown they're not going to be in that top four when it originally comes out, but I have no doubt in my mind that if one of those teams, if Baylor, TCU, or Oklahoma State, Oklahoma still could get in there.
I think
with
they
their
could.
One loss being, or their one loss, but that's a bad loss to a Texas team, and I think for a Big 12 team to get in, they would have to go undefeated. But if TCU or Baylor wins out, or Oklahoma State, who's also undefeated, all four of those teams, Baylor, TCU, Oklahoma State, and Oklahoma, all have to play each other in this last month. If one of those undefeated teams wins out, I think you'll see them in the college football playoff.
Right.
But right now, I don't mind the Big 12's philosophy just because I think they know that by the end of the season, when you have to go through that gauntlet, that you will get in. But then again, making those teams go through the gauntlet decreases your chances of getting a team from the Big 12 in there because you have no breaks in the last month of your season. If you spread those teams out and had to play the other bad teams in the Big 12 between those really four good teams, then it'd make it easier for Big 12 to get into there.
Right.
I think they need a conference championship.
Yeah,
I mean, that's in my opinion, that's what's hurting them big is not having a conference championship that feeds into the playoff. You know, SEC had it in the BCS era, ACC had it, Big Ten had it. So I think it's time for them to realize that, hey, we need this. It'll make money. You know, every other championship game makes money, and it's only going to, you know, make the conference that much stronger.
Right.
And then they will have a playoff team. But I think not having it is a big mistake.
Which brings me to another question, too, regarding the conference champions. If Ole Miss were to run the table, and Alabama were to as well, and say Memphis hypothetically goes undefeated, do you put Ole Miss in? Because
no.
Then Ole Miss would have wins over Alabama, LSU, Mississippi State, Texas A&M. Their only two losses would be on the road to Memphis, who, if they go undefeated, are most likely going to be a top 10 team. And then their other loss would be to Florida on the road, who most likely will run the table. And then if they were to face them in the SEC championship game and beat them, then they would avenge that loss. So Ole Miss, I really think if Ole Miss runs the table, they might have a shot. I really do.
I don't see them running the table, though. That's the thing. I can see them easily losing to LSU.
I don't see them running the table, but if they do, they're going to be in the mix. But I think that that kills the SEC because I don't think the SEC gets I don't think LSU or Ole Miss would get in there with two losses. I think what the committee is saying here is with LSU and Alabama at 2-4, they think Alabama, despite Alabama's one loss, they think Alabama is a top four team skill wise and just the way that they've played and handled their teams after that Ole Miss loss. I think the committee thinks that Alabama is a top four team. And they know that this weekend it's going to play out. If Alabama wins against LSU this weekend, they've proven that they are a top four team. If they lose, stick a fork in them. They've proven they're not a top four team. So I think that's why you see Alabama at four, because right now the committee thinks they are, despite that loss, and they know it's going to shake out this weekend.
I would say that I totally agree with Eric. I would also say that the committee is saying that Alabama consistently is a top four team. If you notice, last year when we had the quarterback controversy in the first several weeks of the season, we weren't as good. We were a little shaky on offense and a little shaky on defense. Once we established an offensive leader, we picked it up. And I think the committee is saying, yes, Alabama struggled in the beginning part of the season because we didn't have a quarterback decided. And they're also saying that since Coker has shown that he's a leader, look at what he's done. He led a comeback. And I guarantee you, if he started that game, it wouldn't have been. The five turnovers, yes, is a problem, but I honestly think, and I don't like Coker that much, but I honestly, he's earned the respect of saying now he's earned the, he's a leader and Alabama's a better team because of it.
And I think another reason you see Alabama in the top four is not because, I think the committee believes that Alabama didn't lose because Ole Miss was the better team. Right. Alabama lost because they beat themselves. So Alabama has the skill of a top four team despite that loss. So I think that there's a lot of reasons and there's been a lot of talk of why Alabama got in there. But I think that the committee just thinks that they're a top four team based off of what you've seen. It's the eye test. It's not looking at their loss. It's looking at the eye test. And they've looked, no, despite Michigan State being undefeated, Michigan State has not looked like a top four team. They haven't, their wins have not been convincing. Baylor,
they got lucky against Michigan. For
sure. Yeah, they did. And then Baylor didn't get in because they have a poor strength of schedule. And even though they might have looked like a very good team on offense, we haven't seen them with
Jared Stidham
right. as their quarterback. You haven't seen them with their backup quarterback, who is a true freshman. Seth Russell was really good. So I think that's another reason. And TCU also hasn't played anyone.
Yeah.
So I think that's why you see Alabama at four. What two teams that shocked me at where they were, maybe more so the one, Stanford and Utah at 11. That I thought they were going to be much higher. And I think that's huge for Alabama because now I was worried about Stanford getting in ahead of Alabama. If Alabama doesn't win the SEC championship. But right now, I think Alabama, they're seven spots away from Alabama. I don't think that Stanford team, even if they beat Utah in the conference championship, can get in.
Well, they still have to play Notre Dame, too.
Yeah, see, they do. Okay. I forgot about the Notre Dame game.
Notre Dame was the one that surprised me. No, who's Notre Dame's best win? Was it the Temple one? Was it USC?
I'd have to look at their schedule, but right now, the only one is Temple.
I'm trying to think off the top of my head.
I think part of the reason is they have a two-point loss to
Clemson,
who is the number one team in the nation right now. But, yeah, they don't have very many huge wins. I mean, Temple is a top 25 team, but so their wins, Temple, USC, Navy, 24-22 loss to Clemson. They beat UMass. They beat Georgia Tech, Virginia, and Texas. They don't really have many big. And it's going to play out at the end of the season. Sure. They have to play Pitt this weekend. Pitt's been a pretty good team. They're not a top 25 team right now. They just lost to UNC, and then their other losses to Iowa.
Yeah.
But Pitt, that could be a good matchup because we've seen Pitt give Notre Dame troubles even back when in 2012 when Notre Dame made it to the national championship game against Alabama. They had to beat Pitt in overtime. Mm-hmm. So that could be a good game. And then they have Stanford, obviously. And that's it.
Iowa and Florida are the two teams mm-hmm. that really interest me because they're in the Power Five conferences, but they're on the bad, if you want, divisions. Yeah.
But I think if Iowa was to win out
and then beat
Ohio State or Michigan State in the Big 12 championship,
I agree.
I don't know how you hold them out.
Completely agree. Even with Florida.
Because, I mean, Iowa has wins against Wisconsin. Right. Iowa has a win against Pitt.
Right.
I mean, they're not really good wins, but they're pretty good wins. Wisconsin, two losses this season, which I saw a lot of people talking crap about Alabama, how they haven't played. Their out-of-conference game was Wisconsin. Wisconsin's two losses this year are to Alabama and Iowa, two top 10 teams. They lost 10-6 to Iowa.
Right.
So, how's that not a quality win?
I agree. And then Iowa or Florida, I mean, if your only loss going into the SEC championship game is a 7-point loss to LSU in Baton Rouge, I mean, that's nothing to hang your head about.
No, absolutely not.
And then if they were to knock off an Alabama or an LSU in the
SEC, I think if Florida wins out and then they win the SEC championship game, that's the only problem. So if I don't think Ole Miss, if they get to the SEC championship game and they win the SEC championship game, I don't think you see an SEC team in there. But if Florida was to beat Ole Miss or an Alabama, I think Florida would get in ahead of an SEC West team.
I could see if Florida beats Ole Miss, let's say Alabama, Ole Miss win out. Okay, that's a plausible situation.
I could see Florida getting in ahead of Alabama.
I can't see that. I could see if Florida beats Ole Miss in the SEC championship, because if Alabama and Ole Miss win out, Ole Miss is the SEC West representative in the SEC championship.
Correct. Yeah.
Florida beats Ole Miss. I could see Alabama still getting into the playoff over Florida.
I agree.
I could see that, but I could also see Florida getting in ahead of Alabama.
Because the committee puts such an emphasis on
schedule,
SEC,
and the SEC
champion.
East is not as strong. You know, you have South Carolina in the cellar. Georgia is not the same Georgia that we saw. Tennessee, let's be honest, you know, we expected big things from Tennessee and Arkansas, and we were all proven wrong that you shouldn't expect big things from Tennessee and Arkansas this year.
But if Florida wins out and they have those two wins against an Ole Miss team that beat Alabama, and then they have the SEC championship win, they still have to beat Florida State if they were to win out.
I could easily see them losing to Florida State in the last. I honestly think.
But if they win out, it's going to be hard for the committee to keep Florida out
of
that playoff.
Because all these teams are going to be beating up on each other, and Florida is just going to slowly just keep climbing up.
Yeah.
And if they beat the SEC West representative, who's going to be a top five team most likely, I don't see how you can leave them out.
Yeah.
I think it'd be tough, but I don't know. I'm not saying this because I'm an Alabama fan. I'm saying it because the strength of the division, the strength of the SEC West is a lot better.
Yeah, but if Florida beats the SEC West team to get it to win the SEC championship.
See, the committee puts such an emphasis on conference champions.
Yeah.
That's why no Big 12 teams made it. And that's what your point was at the beginning.
I don't know how they're going to vote, just because I don't think Florida is that strong without Will Grier.
I agree.
And I think they should take that into account, that a lot of those wins that Florida has are because of their outstanding quarterback.
Yeah, but they have a 7-point loss at LSU with a backup quarterback.
That's why I think if the committee sees that they can win those kind of games without Will Grier.
If they can beat an SEC SEC West champion, if they can beat a Florida State.
Right. It's like last year with Ohio State, Cardale Jones coming in, and everybody's thinking Ohio State has to get all the style points. They got to show the committee that they can still be a top four team with him. And they go out.
Oh, they did.
They absolutely did. Yep, so I think Florida may not have to do that kind of performance, but they have to show that they can win without Grier.
Do you see Florida winning out the rest of their games?
I could. I mean, they're a good team. They have Florida State left, and I think that's about it. I think they might have to play Kentucky, but they don't really have too many real hard games left on their schedule. If they can get past Florida State and then they have to win the SEC championship game, I could see them winning out, but there's still a lot of football to be played. There's a lot of different scenarios that can happen, and I'm excited to see it play out throughout the season here. We're going to take a break here. Coming back, we'll talk about the World Series a little bit, and then we're going to predict the winners of the MLB awards coming up here, and I think they'll be handed out next week. So we'll recap the MLB season coming up here. Stay tuned. You're listening to 90.7 The Capstone.
I'm former Alabama quarterback Greg McElroy, and you're listening to the Student Section on 90.7 The Capstone.
All right, guys, look. We hit a little wall in the middle of practice, but you guys picked it up to finish. And I don't care how you feel or what you do, you've got to have the mental toughness to persevere. Learn from your mistakes, get better, and don't let it beat you. Don't let the conditions out here beat you. Don't let anybody beat you. We're going to win every play, every day, every time. Win on three. One, two, three, win.
Hi, I'm Mitch Gaspard, head baseball coach here at University of Alabama. You're listening to the Student Section, 90.7.
Turn the quiet up, turn the noise down. Let this old world just spin around. I wanna feel its sway, wanna feel its sway. Put some feel good in my soul. Drink a little drink, smoke a little smoke. Want a little more.
Hey, Peach. When you're talking, talk more.
Yeah.
Move your mic a little bit just so, because you're like, sometimes you're like really, really low on it. All right.
Yeah, my bad.
Not too close, though. All right, cool?
Yeah.
Coming back.
Let's do it, boys.
kick back and let the feeling flow.
Welcome back into the student section here on 90.7 The Capstone. I'm your host, Eric Evenson. Alongside me, PJ Glasser and Matt Davis. We're going to talk some MLB here. The World Series just came to an end. Congratulations to the Kansas City Royals winning over the New York Mets. What a great Game 5 that was. And that just that sums up the Royals seasons. That Game 5 was exactly what their season was all about. Going down, or they were down 2-0 in the 8th inning, coming back in the 9th, tying that game up, and then winning 7-2 in extra innings. That just sums up the Royals season. Great team. This could have been back-to-back because they almost had it last year. They ran into a buzzsaw in Madison Bumgarner. This is just a really good team. And it's interesting to see where they're going to be in the future here with Alex Gordon as a free agent, Johnny Cueto as a free agent. This team could get split up some. But I just want to ask you guys, what did you guys think of this World Series? And who... out of these two teams, the Royals and the Mets, who would you expect to be back next year? If either of these teams, which one has a better chance?
I actually think the Mets do, just because of that pitching staff. But I think the Royals are going to be right there. I think they're going to be contenders. I just want to just talk about how the Royals, honestly, they're just what baseball is all about. Just what a complete team victory that was in the World Series, all four games. I think Fox was saying that all of their bench players played at one point, whether they got an at-bat or they were...
pinch runners or...
or whatever it was, or yeah, defensive replacements. And the Christian Colon at-bat in the 9th inning, the guy hadn't had an RBI since August, and he comes off, comes out of the bench cold, cold night in New York,
yep,
and gets an RBI to tie the game, and that's what the Royals are all about. And then the Mets, I mean, you got to give the Mets credit. All the things that got them to the World Series are what let them down in the World Series. I mean, Daniel Murphy, as good as that guy was against the Cubs and the Dodgers, he was just nowhere to be found against that Royals pitching staff.
I was not expecting him to do what he had been doing the whole playoffs in that World Series.
I agree.
There was no way he was going to keep that up.
But for him to just completely, like, shut down and not have, I mean, just no. And then Familia, too. The guy hadn't given up he had allowed no base runners in the Dodgers or Cubs series, and then he blows 3 saves against the Royals. So, I mean, we talk about all the time how big bullpens are in baseball, and the Mets were as good as anybody coming into the World Series, and they just let him down. But bright future for the Mets with all those young studs they got. Hopefully they can keep Cespedes and Murphy, who are big free agents, but they got some young talents off. I mean, that Michael Conforto guy, he's going to be something.
Oh, he's going to be a stud.
He's real good. And then, you know, they got good veterans still, like Granderson and Wright, who can still play, and Cespedes looks like he's right there in his prime. So the Mets are going to be good. I mean, obviously in the NL, you always have to compete with the Cardinals, and it's an even year coming up, so the Giants are going to be right there. And then, you know, the Cubs with that young nucleus they have offensively, they're going to be right there. But both these teams should be right back competing for another chance at a World Series title. And but again, congrats to the Royals because they really did play a heck of a playoffs and a great series.
What about you, Matt?
Yeah, I feel the same way. I think the Mets are better prepared for next season. I'm going to admit I was wrong. You know, we were thinking Johnny Cueto was done with the Royals. But he is a free agent, so I think they're going to have to... I think he's going to a totally different team.
Yeah.
But obviously the Mets have done something right with the way that they've raised these 5 dominant pitchers. I mean, they easily have the most consistent, and I think they have the best overall starting rotation, just because it's not
they're all super young,
too. It's not 1 and 2. It's 5.
Yeah.
It's 5 guys that you go out there, you said, all right, these guys are going to... I know they're going to give me 7 good innings.
Yeah.
And that's hard to find in baseball.
It really is. I agree. I think the Mets will be back. I think the Royals will be right in there. Ned Yost is a heck of a coach. Eric Hosmer, Mike Moustakas, Lorenzo Cain, all those guys are really good players. Salvador Perez, the MVP of the World Series, he's only 25. These guys will be back. But I think the Mets are just better built for being back here. I mean, when you have Steven Matz, Zach Wheeler will be coming back. You got Jacob DeGrom, Harvey,
Syndergaard.
And Syndergaard. I mean, those, that's five. That's a hard rotation to compete with. Those are five really good pitchers. And just the uncertainty in Kansas City of losing Alex Gordon and Johnny Cueto. I just think that the Mets right now, if you look at it, the Kansas City Royals by the end of the offseason, I could be saying, okay, they're going to be right back in there because they got some guys back or retooled. But right now, I just think that the Mets are better tooled to be back in the World Series. We're going to move on a little bit, though, here to the awards for the NL and the AL, the MVP, Cy Young, Rookie of the Year, all that. I'll just go, we'll go real quickly here. We only have about 4 or 5 minutes left in this segment, but we'll start in the AL here. Who do you guys see winning the AL MVP?
I got Donaldson.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we've talked about it, how Toronto hadn't made a playoff appearance in 22 years, and for him to come over as a free agent and do what he did was pretty amazing. He was the most consistent player in the AL all year, and I think he's a pretty easy lock for the AL MVP.
I'm going to go somebody that hasn't really been mentioned all that often, but his team won the World Series, and he was in the tops for batting. Lorenzo Cain.
Yeah.
He's a dark, I think he's one of the, I think he's the biggest, him and, I don't agree with giving pitchers the MVP, but him and Dallas Keuchel could be two dark horses that you see are, that are top contenders for it. But
yeah, I agree with Lorenzo Cain. I don't know about Dallas Keuchel. He, I think for an pitcher to win an MVP, it has to be like a trend-sending year, like we saw last year with Clayton Kershaw, where they were literally unhittable. So I don't see Keuchel winning it. I think he'll be probably in the top 5-6 range, but I don't think he'll win it. As good as Lorenzo Cain was this year, and as good as Mike Trout was, I still see Donaldson winning it. I mean, the guy had 123 RBIs, 41 home runs, hit almost 300. This guy was just unbelievable. So I see Josh Donaldson winning it. We'll move on to the AL Cy Young. What do you guys have here? I'll start with you, Matt.
Dallas Keuchel.
Do.
Easily Dallas Keuchel.
I was on the fence here. I almost went Dallas Keuchel, but I think David Price could get enough votes just because what he did with Toronto. I know he didn't pitch very well in the postseason, but this isn't a postseason award. This is a regular season award, and he got his team there. He pitched unbelievably in Toronto. So I think David Price, I think it'll be a close vote. I think Dallas Keuchel and David Price will be probably the two that get votes in the AL, but I think David Price barely edges out Dallas Keuchel. AL Rookie of the Year, go to you, PJ. Who do you have here?
Carlos Correa, the young stud from Houston. He could, I mean, him and Mike Trout, in my opinion, are going to be the two best players in baseball in a couple of years. I mean, the young nucleus Houston has, he's right in the thick of it. He's something special, so Correa.
I have to agree. I think a guy that's going to give him a run for his money, though, is the Indians' Francisco Lindor. I think that he was a great pickup and bring up for the Indians, and he helped spark their team. Unfortunately, I think Correa is going to get a little bit more votes because he was one of the spark plugs in that offense to give them a playoff run.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be Carlos Correa. I think the one thing that kind of holds Francisco Lindor back, he might be a better, not a better all-around player, but I think he's a better defender than Carlos Correa. Lindor came up, and he was one of the best defenders at shortstop in the league already as a rookie. But he didn't have the offensive output that Carlos Correa did in terms of power and all that stuff. So I think it'll be Correa. Another guy that I think will get votes is Miguel Sano of the Minnesota Twins. This guy came up, and he hit a ton of home runs, and he almost got his team to the playoffs. So that's another name that he's not going to win. I don't think he's going to win the AL Rookie of the Year, but we're going to be hearing this guy's name a long time. And then the last AL award we'll talk about here, the AL Manager of the Year. Who do you guys have?
I got A.J. Hinch from Houston. Houston, they had a lot of young talent, but I don't think they were expected to make the playoffs this year. But as a first-year guy, he did a great job. And he got these young guys playing the right way, and they were able to make a playoff berth, and they should have beaten the Royals in that first round. So,
well, I'm going to give two. One is my homer pick, but it's not a homer pick. The Rangers were counted out since April, and Jeff Bannister turned them into an AL West winning team division title. But more likely, I'm going to have to say Paul Molitor of the Twins. I mean, the way that they ran second place in the Central when, I mean, just like the Rangers, they were picked not even to, they were where they have been usually since 2009, the seller of the AL Central. So my two picks are Jeff Banister and Paul Molitor as the flip-flop. You know, I can't decide between those two.
I have Jeff Banister. I love him as a coach. Me, or everyone, including myself, was counting out the Rangers, and Jeff Banister completely proved me wrong. Former bench coach of the Pittsburgh Pirates, so I like him. He's a great coach there. So I have Jeff Banister. What he did with that team was really, really good this year. We'll move on to the NL here. There's not as much controversy, I don't think, in the NL in terms of where this could go. In the NL MVP, do you guys have anyone else but Bryce Harper?
Nope, got Bryce.
I would only throw out Zach Greinke because of his 1.66 ERA, or Jake Arrieta for his 22 wins for the Cubs.
Yeah,
I highly think Harper.
Yeah, I don't think no other either of them are going to win. So I think we're all on Bryce Harper there. NL Cy Young.
I got Arrieta.
Arrieta. Yeah.
I have to say Arrieta. ERA is impressive, but 22 wins is also impressive.
Yeah. This was basically a toss-up. I went with Zach Greinke just because I don't like the Cubs. So there's my reasoning there. But it's either, you can't go wrong with either one. Arrieta was the best pitcher we could have seen in the second half of a season in a long time. So he was really good this year. Zach Greinke was really good.
I mean,
also,
look at their stats: 22-6 for Arrieta, 19-3 for Greinke, 1.66 for Greinke ERA, 1.77 for Arrieta innings pitched. Greinke went 222. Arrieta went 7 more innings. Greinke gave up 2 less hits total. Yeah. So very, very close. And Greinke has a .02 advantage in whip. So I mean, yeah, these two are very close. Very close.
Very, yeah, really close. This is probably going to be the tightest race out of all the awards in any league. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited to see how that one turns out. And now Rookie of the Year. Anybody else but Chris Bryant?
No.
Not a chance.
I think
maybe Stephen Piscotty.
There was, yeah,
maybe
he was really good.
Maybe Jung Ho Kang has a chance.
Yeah,
if he didn't get injured,
and there was a point where Chris Bryant was hitting about .249,
right?
And I think at that point there were some other guys like Jung Ho Kang or Matt Duffy, or Piscotty was really good, but I don't know if he played enough. He was only up for about the last half of the season, if that.
Yeah,
so I don't know if Piscotty played enough to really get himself fully in that conversation, but
right.
Chris Bryant ended the year really well, and I don't see it going to anyone else but Chris Bryant here. Last award, we're going to go over the NL Manager of the Year. I think it's pretty obvious. Do you guys have Joe Maddon?
I do. Terry Collins will get some votes, but what Joe Maddon was able to do with that young talent, I mean, all the rookies he had, Schwarber, Bryant, Solaire, Russell, I mean, just didn't miss a beat, so you got to give it to Madden. Coming over in his first year, did a great job.
Do you have Madden?
Yeah, I got Madden.
Got Madden. I think Joe Madden's going to win it, but if I had a vote, it would go to Mike Matheny. Just what he did with that Cardinals team, led the league in wins, over 100 wins, and they were just littered with injuries throughout the year. Matt Adams, Matt Holliday was hurt all year. I mean, no Wainwright all year. This team had so many injuries. Yadier Molina was out for some time. I just think it's unbelievable what Matheny did with this team, and he would get my vote, but I don't think he's going to win it. I think it's going to go to Joe Maddon.
We have a little bit of time. Do you want to do NL and AL Comeback Players of the Year?
Just for fun. Yeah, okay, let's do those. What do you guys think? NL Comeback Player of the Year here.
Ooh. Let's see. NL Comeback Player of the Year?
I'm tied between Matt Harvey and Joey Votto.
Yeah.
I mean, Joey Votto came and he was a wrecking ball. Harvey, even with his limit, he still pitched very well. And even in the playoffs, he did very well. So it's hard to, I'm flipping between Joey Votto and Matt Harvey.
I think my vote would go to Harvey just because he came back for more. Joey Votto really just came back from
old age.
Bad
season,
and he didn't even really have that bad of a year last year. I mean, it was just a pretty normal season. I think he hit about .280 with his normal.
Yeah.
Near .400 on base percentage. I mean, he was an above average player last year. So I think Matt Harvey would get my vote there.
I would agree. Harvey. Yeah.
Okay. AL Comeback Player of the Year. I mean, the three notables here, A-Rod, Chris Davis, who came back from hitting below 200 last year, and then Mark Teixeira. Which one of those two guys do you think?
I don't agree with CBS Sports. You know, the last time A-Rod had a rebuild tip, he went on a tear, and the Yankees won the World Series. Mine, and it's not because he's a Ranger, he had neck surgery, and he went on a tear. He is the one of the single reasons the Rangers went to the playoffs and the Rangers lineup was so powerful is because he took the scare away from Adrian Beltre and other hitters in that lineup. So I'd have to go Prince Fielder.
Yeah. I forgot about Prince Fielder. That might be my pick there. I think it would be him or A-Rod.
I think those are the top
A-Rod
two for
A-Rod had
finishing.
A really good year coming. At 40, that's a big year for the AL, for an AL comeback player of the year there. So that's it for our award talk and our MLB preview or recap, excuse me. Coming up, we're going to preview MLB free agency. It starts on November 7th, coming up quickly. So we'll talk about, we'll just run through the big names, predict where they're going to go, if they're going to stay with their teams or go somewhere else for some big money. So stay tuned to that. You're listening to the Student Section.
Hi, this is Eli Gold, the voice of the Crimson Tide, and I love 90.7 The Capstone.
I tell them they can't defend a championship. It's in the history books. Nobody can take it away from you. This is a new mountain. This is a new climb.
It's all about us having to do it again, but 10 times harder, because we know that everybody's coming for us.
We're the team circled on everybody's calendar. We play at the University of Alabama, so we expect to have this bullseye.
So why do you do the right things? Why do you make the right decisions? Why do you push yourself to finish? Nobody said it was going to be easy. It wasn't easy ever before either.
Did you hear about Sandy Alderson? He collapsed.
Who was that?
The Mets GM.
I didn't.
He collapsed in his presser about Terry Collins' 2-year deal extension. But he's okay.
Oh, wow.
But it was just breaking news that he collapsed.
Here on 90.7 The Capstone, I'm your host, Eric Evenson. Alongside me, as always, PJ Glasser and Matt Davis. We're going to preview MLB free agency here. Coming up quick, there's a lot of big names on the market this summer. And I really hope it doesn't get ruined by the qualifying offers. I mean, that's been a theme over the last couple years, is big names have gotten qualifying offers. And people have been shied away by that. But I think some of these names are almost too big that it doesn't matter if you get a qualifying offer. They're going to get signed to big, big contracts. Yep. So we'll just start running down the list here. I'm going to start with maybe some of the smaller names. Well, not really smaller names, smaller of the big names. First one I want to go over here, Ben Zobrist. I mean, this guy can do everything. He can play infield, outfield. He can hit. He's a great fielder at any position, like I said. Where do you guys see him landing?
I see him going out west. I either think he's going to land with the Giants or the Angels. But
yeah.
I'm going to say he goes to the Angels.
Okay.
I think Los Angeles.
What do you think, Matt?
I think the Angels I don't think it's a good fit for him. I can see him wanting to stay somewhere. I think he's going to want to go wherever the money is. So maybe who's ever willing to give him the money. I mean, the Dodgers just lost Greinke, so they could be shoppers
for
Cueto.
Yeah, they need a second. I think Howie Kendrick's a free agent, so they could use a second baseman.
Howie Kendrick is a free agent. I can honestly see him going maybe back to the NL somewhere.
Yeah.
I think he could go back to the NL.
I have him going to the Chicago Cubs just because that Joe Maddon connection. He was in Tampa Bay with Maddon there. They need a guy that can play everywhere. I mean, they have a lot of young guys in the infield. But he can also play left field. He can play right field. He can play first base. He can fill in wherever. He can play second base. I mean, he can play anywhere. So I think they could use a veteran guy like him. he could kind of be their super utility guy. He plays a different position each position or each day, and I just like that connection with him and Joe Maddon. So that's my prediction. I could also see him going to the Yankees. They could use a second baseman. They almost traded for him this off this trade deadline, but he ended up going to Kansas City. So those are two teams there. I'm going to pick the Cubs, though. All right, we're going to move on here. Jordan Zimmermann, the pitcher from the Nationals, really good pitcher. I don't think he's going to stay in Washington. Where do you guys see him going?
I can honestly maybe see him re-signing with the new manager. I think that he could be excited that the Nationals are getting a new manager, a new face. You know, Matt Williams is gone. But I would be hard-pressed for him to go leave somewhere where he knows that they have the opportunity to win and they get a new manager. And Dusty Baker, no less.
I think he's going to the Cubs. I do. I think with Arrieta and Lester there, I think you add him into that mix. Being from the D.C. area, Jordan Zimmermann's been a hot talk about whether the Nats will keep him or not, and everybody seems to think that he's not going to stay. The Nationals will offer him the contract, but I just don't think he'll stay. The Cubs, I definitely see as a fit.
I completely agree with you there. I have him going with the Cubs. He is from Wisconsin, so he's up in that area. He's a Midwest guy. There's been a lot of rumors about him wanting to move back and play in the Midwest. So I see him going to the Cubs. Another team I could see him going to is the San Francisco Giants. They could use another pitcher. They have a lot of free agency pitchers. They have some money, so I could see him maybe signing there. But the Cubs, man, they have deep pockets, and I don't know why you wouldn't want to go play there with all their young talent. Next guy we're going to talk about, Alex Gordon, the Kansas City Royals. This guy's been almost Mr. Royal. He came up from their farm system, started at a third baseman. They moved to left field. He's become one of the best defending left fielders in the game. He also can hit. Where do you guys see him going, or do you see him staying? I'll start with you, PJ.
I think he stays in KC. Like you said, he was brought up in the organization, been there through the tough times, and I think he knows his team's going to compete for probably five more years or so. So I think he's staying right where he is.
It's like you said, Eric, he's Mr. Royal.
Yep.
I mean, he's staying.
I completely agree. I don't see him going anywhere. And I think if the Royals last year, or we didn't see them throw the money at James Shields. I don't think you'll see him throw the money at Johnny Cueto, but I think you got to keep this guy. He's a great leader on this team. The guys respect him. He's a heck of a left fielder. He can hit. He's the Royals type of player. So I see him staying in Kansas City. PJ, we're going to move to your guy, Chris Davis. Do you see him staying or do you see him going?
No. Chris Davis.
No?
He's leaving. Yeah, I hate to say it. Him and Wieters will both be gone probably. Chris Davis, I don't see it maybe happening, but I think he should go if he's going to leave. I think he should stay in Baltimore, first of all, because he's had a lot of success in Camden Yards. But he's going to go to the Yankees. I mean, that short port and right. That short porch. And
we could see him hit 70 on that short porch.
You joke, but seriously, I mean, he's going to hit fly balls that'll just bury. Yeah. And that's kind of what the Yankees like is just lefties who have a lot of pop, who either hit or miss. And the Yankees are the kind of team that would pay him the kind of money he's looking
for. And this doesn't get mentioned a lot with Chris Davis. But he's not just a first baseman. You could DH him. You could play him at third. You could play him in
left
or right field. He can actually play pretty well all over the park. So that's another thing with Chris Davis. Matt, where do you see him going?
I think I agree with PJ. I think he's probably going to stay in the AL East. And like I said, with Chris Davis being who he is and what he's done, he's going to go after who gives him the most money.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree that he's going to stay in the AL East. But I am staying with the Baltimore Orioles.
No, it's not going to happen.
I just with the guys that they've seen leave, Nelson Cruz, you're going to see Matt Wieters leave this offseason. Markakis. I think they need to keep one of their guys. So I think you could see Chris Davis staying in Baltimore.
They're saving their money for Machado.
Yeah, I could also see that, but I could see him staying. But another team that I could see him going to, other than the Yankees in the AL East, is the Toronto Blue Jays. They love those power bats. Chris Colabello is their starting first baseman.
They don't have a power left-handed
bat.
No,
they don't.
All their guys.
If you put him between Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion, That'd be pretty scary there.
I mean, even the Red Sox, you know, they got the monster. He hits the ball all over the field.
He does.
And I think they're going to want to redo the deals with Hanley and Pablo. They need another guy.
Right. Yeah.
I agree. All right, we need to speed this up a little bit here. That's my fault, but Johnny Cueto, where do you see him going? He's not staying in Kansas City.
No, Dodgers. There were a lot of talk trade deadline about him going there, and I think it gets done during the offseason.
So. I'm gonna throw something out there. Dusty Baker, he's gonna want to reunite with him up in if the Nationals lose Jordan Zimmermann, he's gonna want to go back with Dusty Baker. I could honestly see that happening.
Yeah, I could see that. I have him going to the Boston Red Sox. They need pitching. They have a lot of money. I could see him throwing them at him. Next guy, we talked about him during the playoffs. Daniel Murphy, he's not staying in New York.
They want him gone.
He's going to get a big pay raise and probably an undeservedly one just because those playoffs got him about $20 million extra. Where do you see him going?
Murphy, I think he could go to the Angels as well. Tyler Featherston is their second baseman.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, Angels, all the talk was, all you got to do is get Trout and Pujols out, and then you'll be good. And Murphy, I mean, if he can provide some power, but I like him in L.A.
I'm going to say the Dodgers. I'm going to also go L.A., but, Harry Kendrick's a free agent. Daniel Murphy's a little younger than him. He is, I believe...
29, I think.
28? He's 30.
He's 30, okay.
But he's still, that's 4 years younger than Howie Kendrick. They need somebody. The Dodgers lost Kendrick and Rollins. They need a younger infield.
Yeah, I agree. I could see him going there. I think it's going to be between the Los Angeles teams, the Dodgers and the Angels. I have him going to the Angels. I think he's a Mike Scioscia type of player, puts the ball in play, and I think that's a really good guy to put in two-hole ahead of Trout and Pujols. Zach Greinke, another L.A. player. Where do we have him going? I'll start with you, Matt.
I think he's going to go to the Cubs. I mean, he's a free agent. He opted out. I think he's going to want to go to some team where there's youth and there's a chance to win. I think the Cubs.
I think he'll go for the money. I think he'll go to Boston. So
I have a little bit of a dark horse here. I have him going to the Texas Rangers. He almost signed a contract with them 3 years ago. They now have Cole Hamels.
They don't have Gallardo or Colby Lewis on the roster anymore.
And this is a team now they've proved they can win. I just think now this is the time when Zach Greinke could go to the Texas Rangers. I think it's either going to be that or the Los Angeles Dodgers staying there. Moving on, Yonis Cespedes, where do we have him going?
Definitely not the A's. I think he's done in Oakland. I think he's done in New York. Probably done in Boston. I mean, he's been all over in a really short time, so it's hard to say. It's really who's going to – I think he's going to want to go to a hitter's park. So I can't
maybe say. Baltimore, honestly. I think we're going to try and get Upton or Cespedes. I think Upton's more likely because Parr is a free agent too, and we don't have a right fielder. So
I think – I'm going to say the Cardinals. Jason Hayward's a free agent. Jason Hayward's a free agent. He's 26. Cespedes, I think, is pushing 30 now.
He's 30. Yeah. He just turned 30,
I think. I can honestly maybe see the Cardinals need an outfielder.
Yeah. I have them going to back to Detroit. I know it's not a hitter's park, but I think they're going to try to revamp, get to those playoffs, and I think they'll throw some money at him, and I think you could see Yonis Cespedes back in Detroit. Moving on, PJ just mentioned him, Justin Upton. Where do you see him going, Matt?
I think the Padres are going to do whatever they can to keep him.
Yeah, I do too.
I think maybe if there's a chance whoever hires Bud Black, there's talk. I think the Dodgers are trying to hire him, so maybe the Dodgers. But maybe I think the NL West is where he's going to stay. He seemed more comfortable out there.
Yeah, he did. He started his career in Arizona. But I see him going to the Seattle Mariners. They need an outfielder. They need a power-hitting guy. And I know they have Nelson Cruz, but they don't have Austin Jackson anymore. Their right field situation is a little bit...
And Cruz is 35.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think they need a power-hitting outfielder, another one. So I see Justin Upton going to Seattle. They're going to throw money out somewhere. Two more guys left really quickly. Jason Hayward, is he staying in St. Louis or is he going?
It depends on if he holds out and the Cardinals sign a different outfielder, like I said, Cespedes, I think he goes somewhere else. Where, I don't know, but... I think he wants to go to a winner, so he's either going to go – he's probably going to stay in the Central because it's so competitive.
Yeah.
He'll stay in St. Louis.
I think he will, too. I have him staying in St. Louis. Last guy, the big guy on the market, David Price. Where do you guys see him going or staying?
I think he's going to Texas. You have Greinke. I have Price, so we'll see.
I don't really see any of these guys going to Texas. I don't think they have the big enough checkbook. I want to say, I would love to say they do. I think Price is definitely going to look for that paycheck. I might say the Yankees, just because Sabathia is going down. They need pitching, and the Steinbrenners, this would be their claim to, you know, we're not living in our father's shadows anymore. Let's sign a big name like Price.
I have him staying in Toronto. They give up too much for him to see him walk away. I think they're going to throw everything they have at him. So I have him staying in Toronto. I could see him going to the Yankees. I could see him going to the Cubs. I could see him going to the Rangers. I could see him going a lot of places. Everyone's going to want this guy. But I think Toronto will throw everything at him. That's it for MLB free agency. It starts the 7th. So that the MLB free agency, I think, is the best free agency out of all of them. It's a lot of fun. A lot of rumors getting thrown around. So look into that. It's going to be fun. That's it for the MLB free agency predictions. Coming up, we're going to have a short buy or sell section, some quick game type questions, so stay tuned. Those are going to be fun. You're listening to 90.7 The Capstone.
Hey, I'm Joe Tessitore from SEC Nation. You're listening to 90.7 The Capstone. Roll Tide.
You're listening to the actual longest running sports talk show in Tuscaloosa. And
if you want to know the truth about it, pisses me off when I talk to people
that say otherwise. This is the student section on 90.7 The Capstone.
Welcome back into the student section here on 90.7 The Capstone. I'm Eric Evenson. Alongside me, PJ Glasser and Matt Davis. We have a short segment here. Some buy or sell questions, so let's get right into it. I know you guys don't know a whole lot about the NHL, but we have a quick question here. Buy or sell, Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin in Dallas, this is Matt's team, so he might know some of this, are the best scoring duo in the NHL. Right now, both of them are tied for the league in 20 points apiece. I mean, they're killing it right now. So buy or sell, they're the best duo in the NHL right now.
Yes, I would have to say so. Guys are two young studs. Dallas plays an exciting brand of hockey. If you haven't seen them play, you should, because they're very entertaining. But those two are very good, so I would say yes.
I'd have to say yes. I think, you know, they're very competitive, and getting Seguin and Ben together is probably one of the best things that happened to Dallas. And along with, I mean, it's just fantastic to watch them play together.
Yeah, I mean, I think they are. I actually think Jamie Benn could be the best scorer in the NHL right now. It helps having Tyler Seguin on your line. These guys, Tyler Seguin's 23, I believe. Jamie Benn's 26, so they're going to be here for a long time. Dallas is a really good team, leading the West right now in points. They're here to stay. Moving on, buy or sell, Steph Curry is the best player in the NBA right now.
This is a sell. LeBron James is still the best player in basketball. Steph Curry's had a nice 4 games. He was the MVP. But, I mean, just look at the finals last year, what LeBron did. Still the best player in basketball. Curry's good, but he's not LeBron good.
I'm going to buy it. I think that I think LeBron is, you could call him the best if you want to, 2-4 in the playoffs, and the championship, and the NBA championship speaks volumes. So I think that not only is Steph Curry the best, I think he's probably the most clutch player in the NBA right now.
I'm going to sell this. I think LeBron James is the best player in the NBA, and I don't think it's very close. Steph Curry is a great scorer, a great shooter, but LeBron James is just an unbelievable all-around player. So, and those that 2-4 in the NBA Finals, that's LeBron versus the other 12 players on the other team, because LeBron has no one on his team. So, or hasn't in the finals that have
another
been healthy.
For another day.
So, yeah, we're not going to
make that. We still
got
the entire NBA season.
But LeBron James is the best player in the NBA, so I'm selling that Steph Curry is the best. Buy or sell, the Big 12 will not get a team in the college football playoff.
Great question. I'm actually going to go sell on this one. I do think they get one in, and get ready, it's going to be Oklahoma, boys. Oklahoma gets Baylor and TCU at home. And then, obviously, they got to go to Oklahoma State, but Oklahoma State's not very good. So I think Oklahoma gets in.
I'm going to buy it, and it's going to be TCU. Trevon Boykin's going to probably push the Heisman candidacy to its limit, but I guarantee it's going to be TCU.
Selling that they do not get a team in the college football playoff. Buying Oklahoma State is going to get in the college football playoff.
Stop.
They get Oklahoma, TCU, and Baylor at home. I think Mike Gundy is a very underrated coach. These guys put up a lot of points. I know they can't stop anyone, but nobody can in the Big 12. So, at home, I think Oklahoma State could get in. And I think the Big 12 will get in. Really quickly, we got to get out of here. Buy or sell, Oakland Raiders will make the playoffs in the AFC. Right now, they're the sixth seed.
Sell. Got two good friends who are Raiders fans, but they won't make it.
I'm going to buy it just because I think they're playing really good football right now.
Selling. They play the Steelers this week. Steelers are showing...
Go Raiders, baby!
The Steelers are showing what playoff football is. They're not going to make it. The Steelers will get in. So that's it for our show today, guys. Thanks for listening. Tune in next week. We'll be back Wednesday at 3. Again, thanks for listening. Roll Tide, guys. Thank God I'm a country boy. When the work's all done and the sunset low, pull out the fiddle and the rosin up the bow. Kids are asleep, so I keep a catalog. And thank God I'm a country boy. I'd play Sally Gooden all day if I could, but the Lord and my wife wouldn't take it very good. So a fiddle when I can, work when I should.